Up next, Trisha Barker joins us. We're going to be talking about her near-death experiences. She's a intuitive medium, so we'll be talking about all kinds of things and calls in our final hour at Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Trisha Barker back with us. She last on with us about 2 years ago. Trisha is an intuitive medium experiencing a profound near-death experience herself during her senior year of college. We'll have her talk about that. And this experience guided her to teach all over the place, overseas in public schools at the college level. Her near-death experience story has been featured on I Survived Beyond and Back and featured on the Dr. Oz Show as well. Trisha, welcome back. Always good to chat with you.
I'm excited to talk with you tonight. How are you?
I'm fine, and I hope you are weathering everything.
Oh, yes, yes. And I'm excited to talk with you about all these different topics.
For those who didn't hear you a couple of years ago, tell us about this near-death experience. What happened to you?
Yeah, so as briefly and succinctly as I can put it, I was in a car accident and fractured 3 vertebrae in my spine, but there was a lot of internal damage. And so I waited a while for surgery, and when I was taken in for emergency spinal surgery, my heart stopped at some point during the operation. And I lifted up out of my body, and the first thing that I saw were these angels or light beings. They were just massive, intelligent beings. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, they work through the surgeons. I think these brilliant surgeons do not realize that these higher beings are actually assisting them in surgery. And that really shook me up because I was agnostic, and I placed a lot of importance on the brain and, you know, materialism, and to see that there was this other side and this disconnection from my own body, that was alarming enough on some level, but to see that we were actually assisted by other beings, that just blew my mind. And the experience was peaceful and beautiful. I mean, I felt complete happiness to know that on
bliss.
A spiritual level we go on.
You had that state of bliss, didn't you?
Yeah, and the bliss just got deeper and deeper. And for people who have experiences that stop, like just right there at that out-of-body experience, they really miss out on the deeper consciousness experience. And I think some of the most important parts of a near-death experience are the oneness experience, that blending with all that is, you know, from plants, animals, the sky, people, but especially people. I felt connected to everyone I had ever known at a heart level. I mean, and this is even like someone who just handed me a cup of coffee. You know, as my soul was leaving
right.
this body, I just felt, oh, hey, let me send you love and tell you to have a good life and kind of spread this goodwill throughout everyone I knew. And, you know, even people who had been cruel to me, there was still this sense of, oh, this is just a little bit of a physical game we play down here. Let's just let go and move to this higher perspective of compassion. And some of the key elements of my near-death experience was the life review, and I learned not to be judgmental. You know, younger people mm-hmm. can be very cliquish and judgmental, and I was, you know, in my early 20s at that time, a college student, and I saw that we miss out on all these amazing people by not looking at their hearts and understanding who they are inside. And that was one of the deeper lessons of the near-death experience. But ultimately, you know, I saw my grandfather in the afterlife, and he asked me if I wanted to go on. And I knew that go on meant going really deep into this experience. And I started getting these universal messages, like love is all that matters, it's all we take with us, and other messages like be like a little child, remind them to go to nature. And as I was moving away from my grandfather toward the light, I felt people's prayers trying to pull me back into my body. And one thing I get asked a lot by people who listen to near-death experiencers is they go, well, does prayer work? Well, what I see prayer as the soul over there, as I see it as an energy. So if you're praying with love for someone, even if they die, that person's soul will take in all that information and they will know your love from the other side. They will understand it. So communication there is sent through light, telepathy, and emotion, really, the emotion of love. That's the easiest way to communicate. So as I moved through those prayers and went to that light of God, everything that had been wrong in my life, I don't know, there's a lot of people on this planet who walk around and they feel chronically uncomfortable in their mm-hmm. bodies, and that would be me. And for the first time in my life, in that presence of the divine, this unconditional love, I felt so good. I felt safe. I felt taken care of. I felt loved just as I am. And that was such a relief. It's like this whole human journey had just suddenly made sense in the presence of the divine. And what's kind of unusual about my experience and why it gets studied by researchers a lot is a lot of people walk through life and they're looking for their soul mission, but up in that realm near God, I was given a particular mission. And I was told to come back and work in schools and to be a teacher. And I'd grown up poor, so my whole desire was to go to law school and to make money and really just to be successful. You know, like I had no intention of being of service to the world, you know, in any way. I was all about me. And in that moment, you know, I was shown that I would be of service and that I would help a lot of people and I would remind them of their potential. And that was my mission. And so when you're given a mission like that, you have to follow it. And I have to say, you know, that it, the whole experience just reoriented me in a way that has changed my life for the better.
I was going to say, did the NDE illuminate your abilities as well, your psychic abilities?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, as soon as I was back in my body, my consciousness kind of felt like it filled up the room, and I started reading people's thoughts. You know, there was like a certain amount of EFT that I had right away. There was this sense of just being very in tune with other people. So if they were in my vicinity, if they were in my realm, you know, I joke, if someone walks into my aura, which is about 8 feet in front of my body, I'm going to pick up a lot of what is going on in their life. And now I only do this if they give permission, you know, if this is in a reading or they come to me. But sometimes, you know, in the early moments after that near-death experience, I didn't know how to handle these abilities, and you're just blown wide open. So I was this young person who, you know, would get flashes of the future like 10 minutes ahead of time, and, you know, there were experiences with the paranormal, and mm-hmm. I mean, it was like most of my life suddenly was opened up to, you know, these mystical experiences.
Well, Tricia, did it open up the door to more ghostly experiences and apparitions?
Yeah, there were some really interesting moments. Like, there was one where I was in Vermont, and this is a few years after my near-death experience, and I was with a group of girls, and we were near an Indian burial ground, and we were about to pack up, and this was before cell phones, but we had laptops, and one girl's did have a cell phone. It was kind of early cell phone days, and every bit of electronics in the place just started going haywire, just beeping and doing weird things, and the laptop was completely powered off. It turned on, Microsoft Word opened up, and then the laptop itself started typing different letters, and we were in shock. And I said, okay, wait a minute, there's a spirit here. I understand what's going on. I'm going to talk with it, and I'm going to tell it how to cross over and how to go to the light. And so I just imagined this portal of light, and I felt the energy of the spirit, and I just watched it go through this portal of light. And you know, my friends were in shock, but to me, I just felt like this is going to happen because I've crossed the veil, and I will just encounter this from time to time.
Now, since you've been doing this, you then became a medium in when, 2016 or before that?
You know, I didn't publicly become one until I started talking a lot about the near-death experience, and then many different parents from Helping Parents Heal started contacting me, and I felt this obligation after doing a couple of readings because one woman was really beating herself up, and she believed that she had been the cause of her son's death by telling him not to fix the window in his car until he got his next paycheck, and he was sideswiped and killed in a car accident. And, you know, I knew nothing about him, but I just went into meditation and wrote down everything that I got and sent it to her. And what I saw was that her life changed. She experienced greater healing because of that reading and got back together with her husband, started taking her health more seriously. And I thought, wow, you know, medium readings can really offer release of guilt and shame and can bring people to deep forgiveness with someone that they had not previously had forgiveness with, or they can just feel a connection when... And sometimes I do get readings with people who, you know, their religion kind of holds them back from going to a medium, but they experience the loss of, say, a partner. And when they lose someone they love so deeply, they're willing to take that chance. And, you know, that's incredibly healing, too, to see people feel better.
When did you decide to offer this ability, this gift, to the public?
I think it was around 2016 when I started just doing it for free and seeing if I could do it, because I knew I could talk to my own relatives, and I knew that I had this sense about people when they were ill that I kind of knew when they were going to die. So I felt like I had this connection to that realm. And after doing several, you know, readings for free, I just thought, well, I can't keep doing this because it's taking up time from my teaching. So if I'm going to teach extra classes at the college, well, I need to actually charge for this and maybe just teach the minimum at the college and do more of the readings.
Now, did you have the ability to teach other people how to do this too?
Yeah, you know, that's always my wish when I give a reading, and I love it when we both start hearing the person or connecting with the same person. I always think that the energy of mediums, that we can activate this in other people, because it is just tapping into an awareness. And some people, maybe even without near-death experiences, are just wired, you might say. They're just good at leaving their bodies. Maybe they've experienced trauma in life, or maybe they just have a great imagination, or, you know, there's lots of reasons why some people's consciousness just stays a little bit outside of their body. So for some people, it's a big jump. You know, there's a lot of training that they need to experience that. But
sure.
But I like teaching workshops in this way, because I find that even people who are struggling with it, they do make a breakthrough eventually. They'll email me a year later and go, okay, you know, I've meditated for a year, but I finally had that experience that I'm looking for. So I think we all have that ability. It just can take a little longer for some people.
Do you have many skeptics out there?
Oh, yes. My dear friends from college were agnostic like me, and I'm still close to some of them. And, you know, their minds cracked open a little bit when they read my book, but for the most part, you know, that isn't the realm that they like to play in. So they always have this conversation around, well, that's nice. I guess people just need comfort when they, you know, like when they hear about readings, instead of realizing, like, there's been so many studies on consciousness. I mean, this is not, you know, this is pretty common.
It's very common sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and it's also beyond being studied by science, it's an ancient knowing. You know, this is something that isn't new. That, you know, probably ancient people would look back and go, well, of course we talk to ancestors, you know, like, duh.
What have you learned at this point about the other side? What's out there?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it depends on the soul. I've seen some very creative, imaginative souls. Like, one that comes to mind is a man who built a lot of skyscrapers, and he was an architect, and when he transitioned over there, he was still fascinated by architecture. So in that realm, he continued to build things almost with the hope that someone here might pick up on some of his creations, because there's a lot of ideas perhaps just out there. And if you're open, you might pick up on one. So to him, that was still fun, and he was waiting for his partner to transition and be with him. So there was this sense of he just loved to create. And other people are students. I mean, oh, my God. They want to know everything from the beginning of time, you know, and just know everything about every human being, life on other planets. You know, they want to go, they just want to know everything. And this is kind of exciting for some souls. And some souls who, I don't know if anyone's familiar with the book, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers, but there seems to be some truth to what she writes in that book. And Annie Kagan talks about her brother going way far out into the oneness. At different times, he just journeyed so deep into that he almost became one with God, but then his spirit came back. So I've seen that. But I've seen other spirits stay very connected and very close to their loved ones, as if they're just there if they're needed. They're just like right there on the other side of the veil, and that's quite common too.
Tricia, are there some common denominators among people who have had near-death experiences? You've interviewed many. Are you finding something that just keeps popping up, very similar?
Yeah, so those of us who've had that oneness experience and gone to that light of God, we're kind of funny characters because we love all people. So there's this sense of whoever is in front of us, we just love them. And, you know, this can be misunderstood a lot of times. So it's great when you're a public speaker or when you're working with crowds of people. But, you know, this is we joke about it a lot, but we're a very loving group. And we also have a certain energy. So at these IANS conferences in different places, we often just like blow out electronics. So, you know, a group of near-death experiencers walks into the hotel and then suddenly none of the card machines work because, you know, our energy is really high. We're excited and happy to be there. So there's, there's that interpersonal dynamic between experiencers. But one of the things that really strikes me is how we long to talk with other people who've had these experiences, because it's kind of like being in war or being a veteran, you know, how people can really relate only to other people who have had those experiences.
Yeah, been there.
And there's this sense of camaraderie and this knowing, you know, I call them my brothers and sisters in the light because they just remember. And it's this sense of, hey, you know, this is a real experience and we share it.
Have most of them all had this illuminating experience where when they come back, they're more enlightened?
You know, when people have these brief out-of-body experiences, sometimes they push them down and they forget about them, and it isn't this, like, blown-wide-open experience for them. Later, they might come back to it and follow a spiritual path and open up that way. But I think when you go far enough to get to that unconditional love of God or the divine, whatever you want to call it, I think there is a certain level of higher consciousness that's brought back. And I'm not saying that life can't beat you up and, you know, like really make you very much in your body here and very much about the mundane details of just living. But I think you can never shut the door to that knowing. It's something that even if I tried really hard, I couldn't push it away.
Tricia, we're going to come back and continue chatting with you about your work. Tricia's book, one of her books, Angels in the OR, What Dying Taught Me About Healing, Survival, and Transformation. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Tricia Barker. Tricia, when we take calls next hour as a intuitive medium, what kind of calls do you want?
You know, the calls that I enjoy the most are when people are just coming from this place of openness and maybe they have a connection themselves and they want that connection validated, or they're in deep pain and they really need something to help them feel a connection. So I love those types of medium readings. I don't do a lot of pet readings, but every once in a while a pet comes through, so that's always interesting because people do develop very close bonds with their animals at times, and these animals have somewhat of a soul connection, a contract with us maybe to help us through tough times.
Do you want calls about their dearly departed?
Yeah, that's generally the type of call that I get, is people are in deep grief and they want that connection. I also do angel readings, so energy readings, and future readings are kind of difficult, but you can certainly see the energy patterns that people are moving towards or the directions they're moving in at that specific time.
Okay, so we'll give it a try and we'll see what we do, but we'll take calls next hour with Tricia Barker. And people are fascinated with this. Tell me about Dr. Grayson's new book, After.
Yeah, so it's a fascinating book. I really do recommend it. And what struck me, because it tied to my story, was he did some research around a near-death experiencer who was also a teacher, but she was a health instructor. And she told her near-death experience to thousands of students in health classes, and these students reported this feeling of less stress, greater euphoria, more connection, more happiness, just health in general. And it was proven through this study that her story affected them in a good way, and that kind of stunned me, because I thought, oh, one of the things I didn't even think about, but when I was given this mission to come back and work in school districts, and I first taught in junior high, then high school, then community colleges. I don't know why, but I just decided I would tell the story at some point in every school year or semester to every group of students. And maybe we'd do a meditation exercise and we'd talk about stress, or, like when I told it to high school students, they cracked up and they wanted to tell me ghost stories. But there was this sense of awe as well, this sense of, oh my God, you died? Oh, tell me more about that. And it just opened up a different type of discussion. And I would say that most of my classes had a better sense of community, a better sense of oneness. Because, in spiritual communities, these stories are told all the time, and people go there for that. But in a school system, that's not something that happens frequently. like teachers tell stories, but it's usually just, some humorous story or something off topic. But I made this an important part of classes.
Is there a difference between spiritual awakenings and near-death experiences, or is that one and the same?
Near-death experiencers will say that they're different mainly because we totally disconnect from the body. So I've had many out-of-body experiences and mystical experiences while still connected to this body, and there was something so final about seeing my body on that operating table and seeing the blood and going, no, I don't need to come back to that. Just this total disconnection with the body. And then there's the PTSD, the trauma, because some people have near-death experiences after an attempted murder or, in these horrific accidents. And there is a remaining trauma that is stored in the body. So there is something different. I say it's probably better to just have a nice little awakening meditating under a tree than to, have it in a surgery where you literally die and they have to revive you.
Tricia, recalling our interview from a couple of years ago, I think you recalled things on the operating table and then told the doctors and nurses about it, and they were overwhelmed, weren't they?
So, my surgeon was surprised that as soon as I could speak, the first thing I said was, I was dead. How long was I dead? Please tell me, and how long.
Why'd you say that about me? That kind of thing.
Yeah. And I could tell, because already I was more intuitive, that she was giving me this look like, don't go down this path. I don't want to keep talking about this. And she said, look, we thought we lost you, but you're fine now. You're getting blood transfusions. You lost a lot of blood. And later I found out that how I had died is there were internal injuries and I'd bled to death.
Now tell me how you teach students, or at least bring up this subject matter. Are they fascinated with it?
Yes. So I teach, right now I teach creative writing and I teach English. And a lot of times when you're teaching a poem or a short story, there's so many themes that relate to life. And what happens is I believe that sometimes students' ancestors will kind of tap on my shoulder and say, hey, you know, pull this girl aside and ask her about so-and-so and so, because she needs to do something different than the career path she's looking at. So I'll get help, but I won't tell them, you know, hey, your grandfather or your dad just told me that you need to do this. I'll just say, hey, have you ever thought about this? And, you know, just kind of jump into the middle of an intuitive reading. They don't know that I'm doing that. Then other times I saw how those angels work through the surgeon. So my prayer before many classes was, let me be used in that way. If there's a higher energy or a higher power that can work through me, then by all means, let it happen. And there have certainly been times when, you know, maybe channeling that energy or something just seems to move through me and I'm talking about a theme in a particular story and I just notice a shift in a student's gaze or eyes, and students will come to me after lectures and say, wow, I don't know what happened in that lecture, but suddenly I know what I'm going to do with the rest of my life, and thank you. And I'm like, what did I say? You know, I'm not quite sure what happened there, but, you know, there's this sense of, quote, being used by the other side, and it's a beautiful feeling to actually pick up on that.
Tell me about these miraculous physical healings that have been done.
Oh, yeah, I've interviewed quite a few healers, and that subject fascinates me. And my own journey with healing was I had to wear a body cast after the near-death experience, and I was in incredible pain.
For a long time, too, I bet.
Yeah, I had to basically learn to walk again and to just move. And there were some nights when the pain was so great, I learned that, well, hey, I just had this near-death experience. I can meditate and I can lucid dream. I can get out of my body. But then I would just help participate with that healing energy. I saw that the angels had sent this light into my body, so I asked that they continue to do this. So disconnecting from the pain is one way to work on this, but also just imagining that healing can be facilitated through light and through your angelic team, and that's something to consider. But healing can be a journey, you know, and this is you know, later in life I really kind of dug into what is healing, and I went to different sacred sites and healing cathedrals and tried to pick up on the energy. And what I found is that, say you're working on someone has like a pain in their knee or neck, or, you know, they're dealing with some issue, sometimes that's not what is initially healed. You might have to go back and heal some childhood wound that you're holding on to or some layer underneath that. And then as soon as that pain is gone, then you can start working on the physical healing. So there can be layers to healing, but it's still worth the journey into it.
What is it about near-death experiences, Tricia, that magnifies people?
You know, if you think of it this way, George, like, we're born and we kind of go through the stages of grieving. And I think most people, for most of their youth, stay in denial, right? You know, like, I'm never going to die, and they just live free and happily, and then it hits them somewhere in middle age, and they get depressed, and, you know, then there's this acceptance in older age, hopefully. And what happens with a near-death experience, especially when you're quite young, is you just skip right to acceptance. And so there's this sense of glee or joy, like you've just, like, won the game in a way, you know, if that makes sense. Like, oh, I got to acceptance. And that it's almost humorous, because you feel like this very old person and young person. You kind of feel outside of time. You just feel like you know your whole life from beginning to end, and you're just walking through it, and not you're just aware, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Do we all need a near-death experience in order to be able to tap into this?
Oh, no. I think that's why people listen to near-death experiencers, because that knowing returns to them. We all have that memory of what it's like to fly away from our bodies. We've done it in dreams. Most people have had, if you look at a crowd of people, you know, there'll be the hardcore atheist and a few people who will deny a mystical experience, but everyone has had a spiritual experience. They've had some moment that shifts them out of the ordinary into that transcendent, or makes them wonder about what is beyond this body. So I think the more open you are through meditation and through being around people who talk about these things, the more likely you are to start experiencing more.
Have they had some bad near-death experiences where demons pop up and things like that?
Oh, yes. And people who've had these types of experiences want to be accepted for that experience. But the thing that always amazes me is they're always better for it, and there's always some reason why they experienced that. Howard Storm, of course, comes to mind, and his experience is one of the more detailed and explicit of both that realm and heaven. And I really enjoyed talking with him, and I interviewed him and kind of pushed him pretty hard to say, like, do you think if you didn't have that hellish experience, you wouldn't have changed when you came back? Did you personally need that? Because I think these near-death experiences are catered to our soul and what our soul needs at that moment. And he said that he believed he probably needed that.
Interesting take on something like that. Now, would you consider yourself a healer now, too?
You know, I've been trained in theta healing, and I believe that openness to healing is at least a doorway. It gives people a space to find an answer, so I don't consider myself a magical healer, but sometimes I can facilitate space that might point, that people might move in the right direction. I think it's like your choices after a healing that can lead you in the right direction many times, but sometimes people just meet you in the space of openness, and it's the right time for them to just miraculously open to healing. So it's interesting.
What do you think of God at this point, Tricia?
You know, I think God is still what I experienced in the near-death experience, pure, unconditional love. And we, of course, here in this earthly journey, we forget how powerful that love is and how overwhelming it is and how beautiful it is. We really get dulled to it. You know, after a near-death experience, you come back and you face disappointments, and people act and behave in certain ways that are shocking and horrifying, and it's easy to shift your eyes to the shadows and the darkness. But what I saw is, like, no matter what is going on, as long as we are trying to bring in more of that light and turning toward that light of God, then we will illuminate this world for the better.
Have you ever come across something that you would consider haunted by these near-death experiences?
Huh, that's an interesting question. What do you mean exactly?
I mean, you know, have you felt like there was a bad entity out there, or a ghost that was out of control?
Yeah, so, yes. And this one took me by surprise. I was, this was maybe 4 or 5 years after my near-death experience, and I went to see a friend, and I was staying at their place, and I slept, like, on the couch, but they were out, and I was like, hey, I'm going to, you know, they were out most of the day, and I went into the bedroom and took a nap. And in that bedroom, I woke up suddenly, and I felt like something was pushing down very hard on my throat. And I woke up, and I just felt like, oh, my God, there was this entity trying to choke me. And, you know, that it stopped at some point. And so when my friends returned home after, you know, going out and doing things, I told them about that experience, and they really kind of freaked out because they had chosen to rent this house. But the couple that had lived there, both people had died, and the husband had, I think, choked the wife to death and then killed himself.
Oh, horrible.
So I don't know if I was like, I don't know if I was just picking up on the vibration of what happened in that moment, or if, you know, that the spirit just was doing that to me, like that he was just coming back to do that. I like to think, you know, that it was just, I picked up on the energy of what happened in that place.
So we will take calls with Tricia Barker. She will answer your questions about your dearly departed. She'll also talk about yourself as well with a specific question, if you would. And she's considered to be a very intuitive medium as well. What do you use more, the medium ability or the intuitive ability?
Oh, whatever people want in that moment. I think what I'm tuned into is the highest good for the person who is talking to me.
All right, we're going to come back in a moment. Her website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It is her name, and we will be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM, and her book, of course, is called Angels in the OR.